LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, July 17th. Rachel
Good
is
morning.
Here.
I've I'm arrived.
Here. Everybody's here. We've got an awesome, awesome guest waiting, and we'll get to her in just a few minutes. Fascinating show. And Mondays are always good. I look forward to Mondays, you know?
I love Mondays.
Do you?
It was more of a question.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I do love Mondays because I enjoy the week. I do enjoy coming to work. I enjoy doing stuff. And the weekend just slows me down a little bit. I like the break. Don't get me wrong. But by Sunday night, I'm ready to come back to work.
I love the weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you do? Did you do anything special
this
weekend?
We went to Newport.
Newport Beach.
We drove to Newport Saturday and just hung out there and got
it's beautiful,
chocolate
right?
dipped bananas.
It's Orange County.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like picked out our, you know, our future dream
home. Oh, I see. Okay.
Isn't that the funnest part, right?
Yeah, I know.
Fantasizing about how the rest of the world lives, right?
I know. And, you know, you go in those areas and you realize how much money there is in this town.
Man.
There is so much money. I just want the little bit.
Even in this town, even the, like, public buildings
right.
were beautiful.
Right.
I mean, just, like, there's a lot of money in that town.
There is, you know. And but LA in general, just Southern California, you know, obviously Orange County is affected by everything that's
right.
happening here. And I think it is entertainment money mostly, you know. And I mean, even when you talk about
like
lawyers,
yeah, but
it's
I feel
because
it's also,
of the entertainment industry.
I feel like it's definitely that, but I feel like it's also foreign money, a lot of it, because it's probably, I feel like it's, they come over here to invest
to
in
invest.
Property.
No,
yeah.
that's absolutely right, you so, know, but.
It's probably cheaper here for you
right.
know, what they get then.
Yeah, which is, yeah, I know. But it's funny that we would say down here is cheaper for them
right.
because it's so expensive. Did you hear? There was an article that in LA, if you to rent a 2-bedroom apartment, you have
yep.
to make $100,000 a year.
I started to write a joke about that. So I was like, you basically need a career for each room. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, there you go. You know, go to work, do 8 hours for that room, another 4 hours for the other room, and 2 hours for your bathroom, and there you go.
It
you
was just, yeah, because it was following, like, there was that article, and then there was this other article from, like, a senator who was basically saying millennials have no concept of financial, you know, responsibility, and that all they do is spend their money on avocado toast and like almond milk macchiatos. And I was like, I have stopped spending money on avocado toast and almond milk macchiatos, and I still don't have that savings.
Don't have that, right?
Somewhere, you know.
I know. That's bullshit. You know, I mean, when we talk about like millions of dollars, that doesn't matter. And we're talking about millions upon millions of dollars. You see those houses on the beach. And you go, my God, you know, so.
Well, we were talking about, remember the minimum wage last week, but
right.
I think it goes beyond, you know, rising minimum wage. It's beyond that. I think it's just like cost of living. Like even I had like a marketing job and that, and I went to school, I have a master's degree. So like, not that I'm entitled to more pay, but the fact that, you know, even those jobs are not paying enough where you can just have one job to pay for your rent.
Really?
You know, it's,
wow.
I did not make enough to pay for a 1-bedroom apartment, and I was at a place 40 hours a week, if not more.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is I would try and work overtime because you would make more money, right? But they would put a cap on that. So it's, they have a control over, and that was the conflict with me who works in marketing, to go and just be in-house in one job. It doesn't work for people like us because we lose money where we can, everything we do is online. So to be able to take on more than one client at a time is how we make that money.
Right.
But it's just not, it's also, we don't get the support. We don't get benefits. We don't get, you know, an office or whatever. So it's like, how do people do it?
You're
an
independent contractor at that point. Yeah. But no, I mean, there's no doubt LA is expensive, you know. But everything is relative. And if you've ever seen, I saw a show where they show Tokyo and also Shanghai where people live in boxes.
Literally.
The apartments, it's just like you walk into like a prison cell.
Yeah.
That's all you have.
Well,
there's
I
no
feel
windows.
Like their culture is such minimal, is like a of minimalist culture, and we are just in excess. Like, we need to have bigger space, bigger everything. Everything is all
well,
about
but I mean,
space
would you want to live in something like that without windows
absolutely
or anything?
Not,
yeah.
But again,
it's like
but
living
I think
in
it's
a
like,
closet.
I feel like, but people in New York do it. It's a, it's just like, it's a culture. It's all about right. where you're from and what you grow up with. Whereas if they don't know any, like, any to them, they're like, right. what do I need all this space for? A house is where you sleep. You know, right. the, where you go to work is where you spend most of your time, I feel like, you know?
Mm, that makes sense, yeah. You know, plus they probably make a lot of money working in the city, so they pay for whatever they can get, mm-hmm. you know? So that's interesting. A couple of things before we get to our guest. You must have heard that actor Martin Landau has died, and I think everybody knows who he is. Hold on a second. Is this guy leaving without the packages? Without packages, I'm going to kill him. Yeah. Yeah, can you go around after him for a second? No, no, it's okay. But at any rate, Martin Landau was the star of Mission Impossible, and he that was a show back in the 60s with Peter Graves and Barbara Bain. I remember this. I grew up with that. And he was there only one? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. All right, because the guy was going to leave without my package.
I got Sam's package.
Exactly. I can't let him leave. What the hell is he doing? I wait for my Amazon packages for two whole days. So there you go. Anyway, Martin Landau was in a lot of movies, in many movies.
Can you name his most popular? I'm a face person.
Yeah? Okay. Look, he was a star in the 70s.
I've heard
okay,
of that
that's
time.
Yeah, Mission Impossible. There was also 1999 was the name of the show, Space 1999 or something. He went later on to do, but Mission Impossible is, you know, what you see now with Tom Cruise is nothing compared to the original. I mean, the original was the original, you know.
Oh wow, I had no idea that was a remake.
Yeah, I mean, the movies are remakes of a TV show.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
It all makes sense.
You don't know that theme from Mission Impossible? I got to play this for
no,
you.
No, no, no. I know the theme.
You know the theme?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
I just had no idea that was a remake.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, like, that was, you know, a famous Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah, yeah. No,
shows
no, no.
what I know.
Well, you know. But at any rate, he was, some of the movies was, like, a big movie was Ed Wood. I don't know if you remember that. I never saw it. But he was, I mean, I remember the movie Tucker about that that car. And, yeah, you obviously don't remember any of these, right? Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Pretty sure
I
wasn't born for all of them.
No, you were born. You were born. 1989, 1994.
Okay,
Tim Burton's Ed Wood.
Some of them.
Okay, but you were young. Okay, we'll give you that.
Okay.
All right, but at any rate, we'll miss him. He was like my favorite actor. I mean, you know, he when I was growing up.
So you suffered a real loss?
Well, you know, it's not weekend. Like every day I sit and think about Martin Landau, but and he's also one of the tribe as well.
Oh, well, there we
very
go.
Jewish.
One of we've lost one of our fallen.
One
you know?
Of our own.
No, there that is go. Something to be sad for.
Yeah. A couple of other things. Oh, this speaks to you, and because O.J. Simpson is got a hearing set for what Tuesday tomorrow?
Yeah, this week.
Parole hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does your mom have any fear he'll come after her? She sent him
I
to
think
jail.
She's fine.
You know what? This guy can't help himself. But after 9 years in prison. I think he's going to come now. Let him disappear.
Maybe wait till he hears my jokes that I've been doing on stage and then see if he goes
come
after.
Come after you, right? Yeah.
You know, so.
I
which
know.
Is a call to everyone listening. You better come out and see my O.J. Simpson jokes.
Yeah, there you go.
They kill. I mean,
yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Rachel's mom actually was the Vegas judge that sent O.J. to prison for 9 to 33 years, right?
So it was actually a jury who
right,
decided, but
right.
she sentenced
but she,
him.
She presided
she
over the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. We're like pen pals.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we're both pissed at my mom.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
She sent you both to your rooms, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. He's 69 years old now. And then there's a whole article about why we're still fascinated with him 20 years after the O.J. trial.
Because he's O.J. Right. I mean, like, I don't know.
They call it the trial of the century.
Who are
you
we
going to
be obsessed with after he dies? I will basically be irrelevant. No one will care. You know, I need him to live as long as possible.
Yeah, it's your
actually.
Whole show based
I'm probably
on
the
him.
Only person who's like, just live forever, honestly, O.J. Just outlive us all, you know?
Oh, wow. You were young, I mean, when that stuff was going on, right?
I was, 7 years old. But I was fascinated because we were on vacation as a family. We were somewhere. I remember the room, just like all of us were glued to the TV watching the car, the Bronco down.
Wow. You remember that,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I think everybody remembers.
Well, even crazier than that, my principal at the Hebrew Academy, Milton I. Schwartz Hebrew Academy in Las Vegas, this is how culturally relevant he was. And this is before the internet or anything. I must have been like 10 years old, however, you know, very young. She comes on the intercom to announce the verdict to us. And I remember, I just didn't understand, but as if it was morning announcements. By the way, OJ's not guilty, you know, enjoy your day. Make sure you wear sunscreen. Like, it's just.
And did it speak to you? Did you care about it?
I mean,
anything?
I didn't understand because I just cheered. Because I didn't understand. I just meant freedom is freedom. Yeah. You know, like,
I guess
you didn't
7 years old.
You know,
it's
I didn't understand
old.
What had happened.
That's
right.
True. I'm trying to picture 7 years old. My niece is that. Or so 7 years old is very, very.
I was young. Yeah, by the time the trial happened, I was probably a little bit. I was 9 or 10, I want to say. Mm. But I wasn't very old.
Right.
You know,
right.
To even realize like what.
Yeah. What was going, was going on? Man, it
because
was a big
I just
deal.
At that point in my age, I saw OJ as a celebrity.
Right.
And I had known he was like an amazing, you know, to me, he was like on top. He was like a Michael Jordan or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
He not only did sports, but also entertainment.
The commercials and he flew through airports and.
I loved him in Naked Gun.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If we could love OJ for anything. Right. Okay, so that's that, and then a couple of other things. I guess Delta Airlines
and
with Ann Coulter. Now, anything that has to do with Ann Coulter is interesting to me because she's a loose cannon, this woman, and so she apparently they switched her seats, whatever, blah blah blah. She started tweeting about them. You guys are terrible, the worst airline, and they started hitting back, and so it's a back and forth type of thing.
She's vile.
I have to admit, she takes it. But that's the point. You know, you have to, if you want to be famous, you have to be different. And to be, and you have to stand out. And to stand out, you have to be different.
I just
and
think
that's
she
what
has,
people do. Sometimes they
she
do.
She has a platform, and I get it. You know, I feel like all of these conservative people are just like playing this part, really. You know,
right?
this because how can you be so cruel? You know, how can you sleep at night with the words that sometimes come out of your mouth and just the lack of compassion? And I guess that's what happens when you have a skewed worldview. You only see what's right in front of you and what you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But she sure made herself famous. And finally, before we get to our guest, $1 million of marijuana was found in brand new Ford Fusions in a dealership in Ohio. These cars are made in Mexico. They bring them here, and they came in packages that look like half moons. So, and they would put them in the wheel wells. And apparently the police are saying that they've heard of this before, but never in the United States. Mm-hmm. So they somehow smuggled $1 million worth of weed.
But we need to build a wall, right?
Right. There you go. Well, maybe from the Swede we'll build a wall. Who knows? From all the money we're making from the illegal stuff. Anyway, folks, enough with the garbage. Let's get to our guest right now. Mm-hmm. We have a very impressive, beautiful guest.
She's gorgeous.
And we welcome Sarah Pachter. It is Pachter?
Yes.
Welcome, Sarah Pachter, to the show.
Thank you.
Sarah.
Super excited.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us. This was on short notice. She wasn't even sure if we would have her on before a new book came out.
Oh.
I said, come on down.
Please.
We have a lot to talk about here. So, Sarah, are you a native of L.A.?
I am not. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh,
actually,
wow.
I'm a Southern girl.
My mom is from Savannah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very nice.
Really cool. So what was that like growing up there? And you're Jewish.
Yes.
Are there Jews in Atlanta?
Of course. There's a huge Jewish community in Georgia.
There are Jews in
Atlanta. I get the chickens crossing the road.
I have tons of family in Atlanta. Yeah.
No, there's Georgia, definitely a Jewish community. There's several Jewish communities.
Yeah. I went to a Jewish summer camp in Georgia called Camp Barney Menitz.
Oh.
Yeah.
Everyone I know went there.
Yeah.
Yes,
really?
Absolutely.
Of course. And I went to one here, Camp JCA Shalom. Yeah. I made the Jewish camp circuit. I did it.
There
East
you
Coast,
go.
West Coast.
There you know? Go. You see, you're sticking to your roots. And I want to talk about that a little bit, Sarah, in a little while about, I would say, how people are leaving the religion, intermarrying, and things like that.
Sure.
You're pretty religious. Right? From our conversation before.
I guess so.
Tell us what it means. I mean, to what extent are you religious? Like, do you have to do all 613 mitzvahs? How does it work? Because I think
it's more of a spectrum in terms of, you know, everyone does what they can do where they're at and where they're coming from. And there's no, it's not black and white. You know, it's not everything or nothing. It's doing what you can, given your background, given what you feel is good, and just taking it one day at a time, making small choices.
Right. So your background, did you grow up in a Jewish family, but religious?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Very secular, like we are, pretty much.
Traditional.
Right?
I mean, you know, some semblance of Shabbat. I didn't know Shabbat was on Saturday. I thought it was just on Friday night.
Right.
Like, I thought it was like a blessing over wine and bread, and
then
you're
it
done.
Ends
you go
on
watch
sundown
TV
on Saturday, right?
Yeah. Very cool. You know, talking about Shabbat dinner, I have to bring this up. You know, in Hebrew, there's a concept called gematria, which is converting the letters into numbers, right?
Yes.
And so every letter has a numerical value in Hebrew. Mm-hmm. 22 letters, A is 1, B is 2, and so forth. Everything on the Shabbat table, if you convert it, adds up to 7. Did you know that?
I did not know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, if you take wine, for example, like yin, right?
But
yeah.
7 okay, is 7 is like such an important number.
Well,
in
obviously,
the Jewish religion, isn't it? We walk around the in
yes.
the in the.
That's what I'm saying. Right. You know, so it's so interesting. But dog for fish, mm-hmm. it boils down to 7. So fish, wine, challah, which is the bread. Well, obviously, it's on the seventh day.
Wow.
Or, you know, Shabbat is the seventh day and so forth. And 7 comes up a lot. Did you know there's 7 musical notes? There's 7 layers to the atmosphere. There's 7 colors in the rainbow. There's a lot of things with 7. And it's very mysterious. So when you get into the Kabbalah, then they start explaining the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really cool. But anyway, Shabbat dinner. So you thought it's just Friday night. You didn't realize it was all of Saturday, too.
That's
whoa.
Right. Yeah.
What about holidays? Did you guys do holidays like Passover and things like that at home?
We had a semblance of things. You know, I didn't know that all the holidays existed. We went to synagogue on Yom Kippur and the holiday Rosh Hashanah, sometimes from time to time on Shabbat, but I didn't even
but that's
know.
About it,
I didn't
yeah.
even know about other things.
Right, right. And having not grown up in Israel, it's easy not to be exposed to these
absolutely.
Things, right?
And in Georgia.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, the Bible Belt where, you know, there's not really access to kosher and to the same degree as places like New York
right.
and LA.
Right, exactly. Many people in Israel live sort of like they're secular, but the country as a whole is pretty not ultra orthodox, but they live. But a lot of the laws based on orthodox laws, like
right.
for example, if you want to get married in Israel, you have to go through
the three oldest religions are in Israel.
That's
so
right.
like everything is just of the old time, you know, just I feel like that's just the culture there, you know, old school, kicking it old school.
Yeah.
Very connected.
Mm-hmm.
People are connected even if they're not observant.
Right.
Right, exactly. And yet it is a country that in many ways it's like Iran in my view, because you have these very religious people trying to influence politics, you know. But at the same time, you have to remember something. Israel is a Jewish state. It was created specifically for mm-hmm. Jewish people to be protected. So you can't let the religion out of the picture. It has to stay part of the equation. But at the same time, Israel is so secular and so advanced in so many other ways that there's a balance there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you go there often?
We actually, it's hard with kids. I have three kids and one on the way, as you see.
Wow, congratulations.
We did actually just go for Passover, but then before that it had been a couple of years. So
yeah.
we've been and we go.
Yeah. And do you have family there too?
I do. I have a ton of family in Ashdod, Ashkelon, all over.
Right.
Nice. My parents travel there a lot. So
oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I have bat mitzvah there.
Where are you?
At the southern part of the wall where they allow the women.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had to rent a rabbi. He was amazing.
That's great.
My family, my mom, my dad, my aunt, and my sister. And I haven't been back since, but I'm jealous because my sister went and she got confirmed there as an adult. So I was only 13 when I went. I didn't really get to experience Israel as an adult, right? So
right,
I'm dying
right.
to go back.
But that's, you know, amazing. But in Israel, the bat mitzvah is not a religious ritual like for boys, right? It's more like to mark things, but... I mean, do you have to go to the mikveh for bat mitzvah and stuff? No, right?
No.
Yeah.
No,
so you don't have to do that. So it's not really a religious, as religious. Again, and I want to talk about that, the position of the woman in Judaism, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Because to me, it's very perplexing in many ways. But
well, I feel like that's women in all religions, right? They almost, most religions, women are almost like a backseat
like secondary
character.
Yeah.
You know,
even
for only specific purposes. But I feel like it's a spectrum, right? So it's like all in a spectrum. But that's the one thing I love about Jewish culture and Jewish religion is at the end of the day, at least how I grew up, it's all about, you know, being a good person.
Yeah.
You know, being good to other people, to your family, being happy. And they're just, you know, it's not so rigid, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
So.
No, that's true.
Just going back to what you said about being bat mitzvah at the Western Wall. So to give you an example, my brother and sister were bar and bat mitzvah by, it was called the Black Rabbi.
Oh my God.
Like this whole party. And so it's just funny, you know, mm-hmm. your background, my background.
It's funny.
Yeah, it was great.
Interesting. How old were you when you first went to Israel? Was that for your bat mitzvah?
I was 8 years old, actually. Wow. We took a family trip, and it was spectacular. Even as an 8-year-old,
It's great for kids.
At 13,
I
loved it, but
right?
You experience things as you get older, right? And
right.
then I feel like I just couldn't have appreciated it at 13. You don't understand so
yeah.
much,
right? Except
the importance as an adult to your to you and your culture and your family, like what it means to be. Because even if you aren't I'm not religious whatsoever, you know, but it is my culture. You know,
right.
and I still embrace the custom. Like I'm dying to go up to my Jewish summer camp and do a Shabbat there. You know what?
Right.
But like so that is what I hold close to me, and that's
right.
what I think about it.
And it is more than the religion. I think it's the heritage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's where we came from.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. It's just that we're people that are known to be bound by their religion, but it's more than just religion, and
right.
that's what I'm saying. You know,
it's
how we were all over the world dispersed, and we still are,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so it's a history,
right?
Absolutely.
At any rate, though, in Israel, things are. I mean, it's a very unique place, and you know, but again. There's so much many conversations we can have with you, but I first want to introduce what it is that you do, Sarah.
Sure.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Sarah Pachter, and an amazing person that's got. I went through your website, and you've got some amazing stuff. But what stands out about you is you love to write.
I do. Yes.
You write a lot.
You know what's funny? I just started writing 2 years ago.
Really?
Is that
unbelievable? I actually never used to write. I was a speaker for 13 years. That was my passion, my forte. I still do it, absolutely. But as I started to have more children, I had to shift and figure out how
right.
can I still get my message across, you know, because I don't have the same time I had. And so writing really was, I realized I got to go the writing route, but I didn't know how to write.
Wow.
So I had to start, and I just, it's been quite a process.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So you were speaker, what topics were you addressing?
A lot of universal topics, anything and everything. I would have a class of, let's say, 20 people, and they'd tell me what they want me to talk about. So I'd create a class specifically for them. And
So you can talk about anything, right?
Well, I started in New York City in the Village, and it was really, really exciting with young professionals, and it just kind of spiraled from there. So, yeah, it's great.
Interesting. So did you? So you grew up in Atlanta. What was your childhood like? You have siblings?
Oh, I do. I have two siblings, a brother and a sister, both older. Okay. I'm the youngest.
Now, did you guys experience any anti-Semitism or anything growing up there?
You know, a little bit here and there. Nothing terrible.
Nothing major.
I also don't think we screamed Jewish, you know, walking down the street.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's true, right?
And we also weren't always religious, so even more so in terms of the way we dressed or the way we acted, or we looked just like everyone else, so I don't think people could spot us on the street and say, oh, that's a Jew.
Right, exactly. But maybe last names, although this doesn't really stand out as a Jewish name, right?
Well, or now it's Pachter. It was Azran, so that's...
Azran?
I don't know if that's necessarily Jewish
right.
or whatever.
Right. So that's your maiden name.
Yes.
Awesome.
One time I was walking to synagogue when we started to become observant, and someone did call from their car a derogatory, you know, word. But, you know, listen, these things happen. And
was that in Atlanta?
That was in Atlanta.
Ugh,
yeah, but it happens everywhere, you know. I mean, I remember when my kids were at the JCC here when they were growing up, and this guy walked and started shooting, you know.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
And that's before they had security guards.
Right.
Wow. You know, so.
And then there was one in the JCC or something in Atlanta, I feel, or there's something a couple years ago where there was something like that.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So you're always exposed to that. And now in Europe, there's a lot of that going on. So, but what fascinates me is, okay, so you grew up there. Did you go to college after high school?
Yes, I went to Stern College in New York City.
Okay,
that's where
I've
I met
heard
my
of
husband.
It. Really?
What did you study?
I studied speech and audiology. I also
what
had
does
a
that
minor.
Mean? What's audiology?
Audiology is all the inner workings of the ear. Speech is like vocal, and to be able to perform speech therapy and work with, I guess, children, adults alike, in terms of their speaking capabilities. But it goes hand in hand with the ear, because whatever you're able to receive an input is how you learn how to speak. So
right. Yeah. How did you get into that?
It was just something that I was always interested in. Actually, I, as a young child, had a mastoidectomy, which is a surgery of the ear, life-threatening. Only about 200,000 people in the world have had that.
Right.
And one morning, my mom came into my room. I was 18 months old. I was whimpering, and there was a tennis ball-sized bump on the side of my head. And she raced me to the hospital. I had had a regular ear infection. She had given me the perfect dosage. Everything was perfect. Overnight, it exploded, and I needed to have an emergency surgery where it's very complicated, but that was something that I...
Well, obviously, you had something to steer you to. I know,
exactly.
I was thinking, you don't just come out of the out of thin air, you know, you had to experience
right.
it. Exactly. But this is amazing. So this is something that's personal to you, and you decided you're going to go and study this and understand this.
Yes.
Was it interesting to you in college?
Very, very interesting.
Really?
And what's funny is I actually one day in college didn't even realize the extent of what that surgery could have meant in terms of the dangers involved. And one day my professor gets up and says, oh, you know, we're going to skip over the mastoidectomy. No one ever has to learn about that. I said, wait a minute, I have one. He says, no, you don't understand mastoidectomy. You know, I said, no. Look, I've got a scar on my left ear. He paused. He was silent for like a good minute. And he goes, you are one lucky woman.
Wow.
He said, what year were you born? I said, 1985. He said, the fact that you are alive today is a miracle. And he said, and when they go into the ear at that section, there's a facial nerve that's inside the ear so easily, and most people, they sever it accidentally. He said, you could have been paralyzed on half of your
right.
face.
I think that's what, that's crazy. Right. That's what happened. My grandfather was paralyzed on half of his body from that goes to show you how sensitive that area of the body is.
Yeah.
And at a time in 1985, you said, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the surgery that they were able to do that without,
it was
insane.
Quite miraculous.
So ever since then, you realized you're a miracle baby.
That's
right. We all are, really. I mean, every one of us has a story.
That's true. So you went to college. After that, what did you do? I mean, at a certain point, you got into the religion. So tell us.
Yes.
Wait, so
at what point
what
was that?
What did your husband major in?
So he is in real estate and also psychology. He has a master's in real estate and a master's in psychology from NYU.
Smart.
He also, so we met in college actually, and actually, even though I was in the middle of audiology and speech pathology, I started volunteering, speaking about these universal topics and different for schools, for organizations. I just really like to teach. And in the middle of college is when I was asked to start working for an organization down in the village. So I was a junior in college. And that's when it really, I shifted and realized, you know, I love this. I love speaking. I love teaching. It makes me learn more. I think I'm going to switch in this direction. And I didn't really pursue with a master's or a doctorate in audiology, even though it's something that I'm still interested in.
Yeah.
But that's really where the shift took place, was in college. I started working in college already.
Wow.
So you realized you have a lot to say. You're full of information. You want to pass it on, right? It's that kind of a feeling when you learn things and you know things. You want to pass it on, right?
Yeah.
You want to, not to show that you know so much, but it's just like, here, let me share this fascinating stuff with you.
Yeah, something like that. I also think that, you know, you don't have to know everything to teach. If you know A and someone else doesn't, you can teach A to somebody else. You know, you might know B and they don't know B, so teach them B. You don't have to be perfect to start that process of teaching and growing.
Yeah. So in the beginning, did you have an idea what you wanted to talk about, or did you just immediately start with, like, I'll talk about anything?
Well, a lot of it was stemming from Judaism, because I had learned a lot about Judaism and was fascinated by it. And so I
At what point? That's what I was trying to get to.
I spent 2 years in Israel after high school, I spent 2 years in Israel before college.
Oh, was that on birthright or?
It was not birthright.
No.
The program that I worked for in New York was a birthright alumni program. So this was like kind of like a gap year between high school and college. And that's when I really started to...
Into the microphone.
That's when I really started to deeply learn more a bit about Judaism. And I found that you don't have to even be Jewish or Orthodox or anything really to glean wisdom from really all religions, but specifically Judaism. And I felt that there was a lot there for me to then share with others.
Yeah. So that was the trip to Israel that did that?
Yes.
So yeah.
I was there for actually 2 years. I spent 2 years. I got a lot of my college credits through those programs. And then I minored in Judaic studies in college as well. So I was able to kind of combine, it might have even been a double major, I don't even remember now, but that's the truth. But yeah. I was able to combine the two things, and then eventually it went more on the path of teaching the Jewish stuff that I had learned.
Yeah.
Wow.
And was there like a particular something that did that for you in Israel, or was it sort of a process for you?
I don't know.
Meet someone that inspired you and you decided, I want to be like them, or?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I got back from that first year in Israel, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's one of the holidays that I originally in my life had never heard of. I don't know if you've heard of Shavuot.
Of course.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know about what that was. Right. So I get back to Atlanta, and there's nothing going on for women. The men are doing stuff. There's holiday things for the men to do. And the women were just doing nothing. So I said, hey, wait a minute. Let me get together. Whoever wants to come over, I'll host a class. I'll make some sushi. I'll give over something, some sort of mini lecture. We had 50 people come. They stayed till 3 o'clock in the morning. I know that sounds weird, but it's that holiday where people learn till very, very late into the morning. And, I mean, it was really a success. And something about doing that then, I said, this is what I want to be doing. Yeah. You know, this is what I
want
to
really
be doing.
Cool.
Something lit up inside of me. So
very cool.
So that's really was the spark, I guess, that started it all.
Did you feel any kind of connection or belonging to Israel? After all, it was the first time you went there. Did you connect with the place?
Oh, absolutely. Really? Even as an 8-year-old when I went, right. Absolutely. But I think it's layered. When you're 8, it means something to you. And then when you're 15, it means something different to you. And then when you're 20, it's everything changes as your perspective changes.
Right.
As an 8-year-old, it was, oh, I get a lot of toys and I get to go climb Masada with my parents.
Right.
And then you grow.
And the beach and everything. You got everything there. It's amazing for kids, I know.
Yeah.
And then you get older and you realize that people are so friggin' rude and everything. It's like, and especially for me, because I'm from there, and every time I go back, I try to feel like I'm a local, but I'm not. I don't know these people. I've lived here for 41 years, for crying out loud. So
as soon as we got off the plane this past trip, I was like, oh, we're in Israel. People don't wait for each other on the elevator. Like,
no,
what's going on?
They don't wait for anything. You know, at the bus station, there's just like a bunch of people around the door of the bus. It's not like there's a line. There's no
right.
lines.
I love
right.
it.
I went to get some falafel, and I'm standing in line, and everybody's... is in front of me suddenly. I'm like, how did that happen? And so when I told this to my family, they were laughing. They're like, nobody stands in line here. You got to push.
There's no such thing.
Right.
I love it.
It exists.
It's our culture through and through. Just, you know what I mean? Like,
and it's Middle Eastern too. So you mix all of that together and that's what you get. You
Absolutely.
Know, you get a kibbutz, you know, one huge kibbutz there. So you came back and... you decided at a certain point to make a big change in your life.
Yes.
What point was that? I mean, were you like, when you met your husband, was he secular also? Like,
No, he was grown religion. Up pretty orthodox, yeah.
Pretty orthodox. So that's probably what...
No, I mean, no? I would say that once I went... Well, first of all, my family started to become more observant, you know, around 12, when I was around 12 years old. So that started. Oh. And then Israel really solidified it for me, because as a kid, you do what your parents do, kind of because you're in their house. But I didn't know why I was keeping Shabbat or why I was doing any of these things.
Right.
And then going to Israel really solidified it for me. It became
right.
something that I wanted to do. And there was reasons and depth and all of that. So then when I got back... it wasn't for my husband or for anything like that. I would say I was already on that path before I met him.
I see. Okay. So then when you met him, it was like a perfect match for where you were at the time.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Very interesting. And you probably had not dated anybody Orthodox before that, right? Or have you?
I mean...
Well, okay. Let's not talk about that. moving right along. Okay, so you decided to focus on women more, right? And speak to women and stuff, tackle women's issues and things like that.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that. For those of you who want to follow, you can go to Sarah Pachter. No, SarahPachterSpeaks.com.
Yes.
That's Sarah with an H at the end. And or just Google her name. You'll find her everywhere.
Are you on social media?
A little bit.
Okay.
I'm not great at it, honestly, but I know I have to be. So
you
I
should.
I
mean, there's such a huge Jewish community on, especially on Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, and they would just eat you up.
I would
love it.
Yeah, it's hard because I don't want it to take over. I don't want it to.
You're
take
also
away.
Not a social media marketer. Like you need someone to help.
Yeah,
you
need.
Yeah.
You're busy as it is, you know, and that's what I'm saying. People don't understand. I don't have time for this stuff, you know. So you got to get someone to do it for you.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But so tell us some of the topics. You have like a huge number of topics here. You help women with dating techniques.
Yes.
Changing your life through.
I
want to
hear about
passion.
Dating techniques.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
From your perspective.
She needs to know that. I always like talking about dating. No, I'm kidding.
But I'm
kidding.
To know. You know what
we
I mean?
Have a lot of listeners. And plus, I love talking about dating because it reveals people's.
Yeah, Sam, we need for Sam.
Perfect. So yeah, there's a lot of that I do. I actually am a dating coach in terms of that. I'm a mentor. I learn with people individually. I have a bunch of clients. It could be anything from, it's more like life coaching, but there ends up being a lot of dating because a lot of my classes are sometimes about dating. And so people come to me. I also teach brides before they get married.
This is cool. So how did you decide to get into that? Well, I can see now because you always had, You were always interested in new stuff. You always wanted to pass it on to people. Now you found something you're really passionate about. You decided, I'm going to disseminate this to everybody and do this. So at a certain point, you made a conscious decision, okay, I'm going to change my lifestyle now. I'm going to become kosher, keep kosher, and do all these things. Did you decide, like, to what extent you're going to be religious?
Well, as I said before, I started when I was in my parents' home as they became more observant. So we were keeping kosher, keeping Shabbat. I didn't know why, though.
Right.
After that year in Israel, I, you know, really solidified it for me. And then at that point, I was basically in it, you know.
I see. So you made a decision, I mean,
yeah,
pretty much.
Absolutely.
So then, wow, that's fascinating. So you got married. You guys started living an Orthodox life,
yes,
kept an Orthodox home and everything.
Yes.
Now, that's a big deal, right? I mean, look, you change your life. You totally change even the essence of who you are in a way.
Yeah. I'll tell you one of the, just to be very open, in terms of one of the larger struggles for me as an observant person today is that because I did not grow up observant, I don't have sometimes the schema of what that should look like for a child. I'll give you an example.
Right.
So we now keep Shabbat, and all of our kids keep Shabbat because they're in our household and everything. And we love it. I have to say, it's really, when I wake up on Saturday morning and I don't turn my phone on, there's just nothing like it. I'm like, oh,
you're full
free
of joy.
I'm free today.
Right.
But anyways, so my kids, you know, I was never 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 years old keeping Shabbat. So it's hard when you don't have a schema in your mind of what it is it feels like as a kid, because I didn't do it as a kid.
Exactly.
So that's one of the harder aspects, is feeling like I don't have the same empathy, not empathy for the kids, but understanding of what they're going through at that age, because I didn't have that.
Right. That's so true. But I would imagine for some kids, it's probably not a positive experience, because many kids grow up and they resent having grown up in in such a restrictive environment. But let's say that's not the majority of the people, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
I mean, my kids love it. Love it. It's a day where they get mom and dad to themselves. They get to talk to us. We're not looking at our phones. We're hanging out. They play with kids. Other kids come over. We go out to friends for lunch.
It's kind of funny, because it's like, it's, people may see it as restrictive, but you know how much I wish I could be like, well, I can't today. You know, it's like, I'm just observing. I'm not going to answer. You know what I mean? Like, we all need that digital detox, right? It's so healthy.
Right.
There's so much mental illness linked to us being connected to these devices, that I feel like, kids growing up Orthodox today will probably be a lot more mentally healthier than
That's
we
true.
Probably
I
think,
think so.
You know what I mean? Because they know how to detach.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, I talk a lot about that actually, in terms of connecting in this disconnected world, and how we're so into technology and these devices. And I actually was giving a lecture for a group of people that were in their 60s. And so I remember the first time someone came over to me after class and they said, Sarah, my 14-year-old, it's like he just doesn't get off the computer. He doesn't, you know, and I'm thinking, like, she's like, he's not social.
Right.
So I'm thinking, all right, this woman doesn't have a social kid. Like, that's okay. He's just not that popular. It's fine. And then over and over and over in that age bracket, they're saying to me, it's not just that they're always on the phone. It's not just that they're always on the computer. They're not always texting. They don't know how to talk to people.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't know how.
Right.
And so I think that is a gift that, I don't want to say being Orthodox, but keeping some semblance of Shabbat, or having a day where you're not on your phone,
right,
it really does force you to sit around and talk, mm-hmm, because you don't have access to the phone.
That's true. Right. Absolutely. It makes total sense, you know. Before, we only have a few minutes left.
Sure,
and,
sorry.
No. About what?
I don't know. I didn't mean
no,
to.
No,
you know?
No. What I'm trying to say is there's so much more to talk about.
I know, right?
You're going to have to come back, you know,
for
soon.
For sure. When the book
because,
comes out.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So let's quickly plug the book also,
sure,
that's
sure
going to come up, because there's an important question I want to get into. So
absolutely.
Tell us about the upcoming book. This is, you told me, your first book.
It's my first book.
After you've written a million other things, right?
Lots of articles, yes.
Where can people find some of your articles? On your website?
So they can find it on my website. They can find it. There's actually a column here in the LA paper called the LA Jewish Home.
Okay.
So that's every 2 weeks another paper comes out. They can go to aish.com. There's a ton of articles there, as well as the Jewish Press, which is actually the largest Jewish paper in the world.
Amazing.
So that's really exciting. But yeah, the book is called Small Choices, Big Changes, which is really a lot of what I kind of feel is the core of Judaism. It's not black and white. It's not all or nothing. Pick something that you want to do, whether it's being nice to people or picking up litter from the garbage or whatever, just litter from the garbage. Sorry, litter from the street. you know, doing something small, and then you will see that that can transform you.
Right. Right.
And that's actually how the book started. I didn't write a book.
Do we have a phone here? No, it's not your phone. Something, it feels like something's vibrating on the table.
Yeah, it's not
I think
phone.
It's gone now.
It's
anyway.
Not my phone.
No, I know it's not. Okay. I just thought maybe there's a phone.
I thought it was someone's phone.
Vibrating or something. But anyway, finish the sentence. So, small choices.
Small choices, big changes. And basically, I didn't really write a book, in all honesty. I mean, I did, but I wrote an article. I wrote one article. I got one article published. And once that happened, I said, hey, I could write another article. And now I can try a different publication. And now maybe this can happen. And it really was this domino effect. And suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, I've got enough material for a book.
Wow.
So, but I always wanted to write a book. It was never going to be a possibility. But one article is possible.
That's true.
And that's life, you know, one change.
And that's cool because, you know, I always thought about writing a book is too, like, insurmountable to me. It seems like so. But when you do it a little at a time, right? One step at a time, it adds up to be a book in the end.
Exactly.
There you go. There's your secret, you know. Sarah Pachter, that's Sarah with an H, P-A-C-H-T-E-R. All you've got to do is Google her. You don't have to remember all the names of all the social media and everything. She's all over the place. And the final topic I want to discuss, and that is women in Judaism.
Yes.
Do you feel that women are like secondary citizens?
So it's funny. My perspective actually changed. I think when I was not observant, that was absolutely the feeling I had, to be perfectly frank. It felt very, what's going on here? And it just didn't feel right, I guess you could say. But as I became more observant, I realized nothing could be further from the truth. Women are viewed as powerful and capable, and you can do everything as a woman. And it's really empowering, I think. And that's also a message I want to give, is that as a woman, you're not second class, and you're not less than, and you're not subservient in the Jewish world. It's something really powerful. And there's even many, many sources in Judaism that say the woman is the core of everything.
And we have women rabbis.
We have everything.
We have, you know, strong Jewish women.
Well, but not in Orthodox.
And leaders.
Again, on the spectrum. But, like, there's a place for women in Judaism and across the
spectrum. Well, of course there is. But what I'm saying is that there's still a separation. Now, some people argue that men are not different from women. But I think that couldn't be farther from the truth. We are obviously very different in many ways. And but there's a separation there where the women are not welcome to participate in the rituals. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't even touch the Torah, or can you? Can you touch the Torah as an Orthodox?
I think there's also a lot of misconceptions in terms of what is allowed and what isn't allowed. You absolutely can, you know, as the Torah is coming by, women and men alike kiss it.
That's true. So, that's true. But why are they sitting in the back? So the men won't get distracted?
So I don't know why in some synagogues they're in the back. It doesn't have to necessarily be like that. But what I will say is, gosh, it's so long.
Let's leave that for next time.
Maybe we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah, now I need.
It's like trying to take something that's maybe half an hour and condensing it into
2 minutes.
Of time.
No, absolutely, I agree with you, and that's why you're welcome back. We'll
Thank
set up
you.
For another interview
absolutely.
With you. So you guys can find Sarah anywhere. Is there anything we missed that you want to take the opportunity to plug? Or I mean, it's just fascinating to me. So you have a big family now. You have another addition to the family. And you're very happy, right?
Absolutely.
That's one thing about religious people. They're happy. You know, whatever you say about them, they're happy. You know?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
I think I think with every religion and everywhere across the board, you're going to have happy people and unhappy mm-hmm. people. I wish that I could sit here today and be like, yes, everyone religious is happy, but... You know,
no, I'm just talking in general.
You know what I mean?
But yeah. you have the answers, and that yeah. makes things a little easier, right?
I think so.
You have answers to everything. I know. So. Have you dabbled in the Kabbalah at all?
Not so much.
No, it doesn't interest you or what?
I think that a lot of what we have access to is not necessarily
right.
real Kabbalah.
That's
like
the commercial stuff.
Exactly.
But you can do it on your own if you wanted to.
I mean, I don't know if I'm learned enough to really understand the depths of that. I wish I could.
Well, maybe because you haven't looked at it yet, you know?
Maybe,
but that's the preconception that, you know, you have to be male and over 40 and all that stuff. Maybe that stayed. But all I can tell you is if we can learn it in a modern way, but not in the commercial way that the Kabbalah right. Center is here
it's
and
so
they made it.
Kabbalah is so trendy.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
But it's baloney. I mean, I'm talking about the ancient Kabbalah. You know,
where
they give you the origins of everything
right.
and how, you know, very wise people, you know, wrote this stuff. So
absolutely.
At any rate, we got to get out of here, folks. Sarah Pachter, obviously
Thank
a
you.
Very interesting follow her. And when is the book? When do you think it's going to be published?
It was supposed to be June, and now it's September. So
okay, well,
September.
It's happening there. Did you find a publisher?
Absolutely. It's Targum Press.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
How cool for you. You see, you're a very successful person.
Thank you.
Very successful woman. And we wish you nothing but the best, you know.
Thank
I mean,
you so much.
Congratulations. When are you due?
I'm also
with the baby?
Due mid-September.
Mid-September, so she's going to have two births in the same month.
That's right.
There you go.
Thank
well,
you.
We'll plan on you coming back way much before that, okay? Because there's so much more to talk about.
Sure.
Get people. Now, do you provide... So, I mean, how do you make a living out of all this? Can people, like, utilize you for advice, consultation?
Absolutely. Consultations, clients, one-on-ones, groups. I speak for events and parties, and I've done anything and everything. So,
awesome. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Rachel, thank you, as always.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for some other great shows today, folks, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.